only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HD, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races, about 8 minutes in, and been wanting to get to Sean McCarthy the last few weeks, and great to get him back on the show, and the horses that he's handling for Baffert clients. Sean, the longer this goes, the better they're running. You've had your hands on them, you know, for a month and a half plus, and a series of not just stake wins, but some maiden breakers and some allowances. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, it's been a quick almost 3 months. I can tell you that it's gone by in a flash. But it's been quite the experience, certainly.
Before we talk specific horses, talk about this a little bit, Sean, because it's hard to set this up as either enviable or unenviable. I'm not sure which.
Well, you know, it's a unique situation, obviously, and our whole goal going into it was to just keep the ship straight and off the rocks. And, you know, we're responsible for some very, very, you know, good stock and got great help over there and just wanted to keep the momentum going. And I think we've accomplished that as best we can. And we're proud of that. You know, with Jimmy Barnes over there and has helped a ton, obviously. My wife has been fantastic. She's probably had the biggest workload, Steve, with the paperwork and everything of, you know, payroll and so forth, and you know, switching over the billing and things like that. So there's a lot more to it than I think a lot of people realize that goes on behind the scenes, especially with you know, all the paperwork and so forth.
Well, and of course your wife Kim has been the office manager, right, for the business manager.
She's run Bob's business for 24 years now. So,
right.
Yeah, and she's a one-man show, and how she does it, I don't know. You know, you can't give her enough credit, honestly. She does a hell of a job.
For you, you got your own horses, of course, and to then, you know, very quickly have to, you know, get caught up to speed, and you know, because you're doing the training. I know there's people who are convinced that Bob's at the top of the downhill course with binoculars and a walkie-talkie up in a tree there, but that's not the case.
It's horse racing. There's always conspiracy theories, you know. It's been we've been on our own again. Like I said, Jimmy Barnes and myself have you know, orchestrated this and you know, as I said, just tried to keep the momentum going, keep everything the way it's been going, and we've been successful with it. You know, it is, you know, an awkward situation, as I said. But again, I think we did a pretty good job.
Is there a chance that you're going to retain some of the horses after July 3rd?
No,
They're all going back.
They're all going back. Yeah, they're all going back. Yep. So,
at the same time, though, it's got to be satisfying to get your hands on some of these, particularly the ones that were not as established. I mean, you've added some credentials to some of these horses in terms of not just stakes, but the maiden breakers and such that really is a credit to your involvement.
Well, I appreciate that, and at the end of the day, good horses do good things, and they make you look good. And those are some, obviously very, very talented horses there, and we were lucky enough to be in the right spot to run them at the right time, and they performed to expectations. So I think down through the summer here and going into the fall, Bob's going to be awful strong, and he's got a very good group of two-year-olds over at Los Alamitos. I've been over there and seen them, and he's got a strong remainder of the year and going into 23 also.
I want to talk about a couple horses that people probably are less familiar with, including some recent maiden breakers. The Valiant Minister filly, the three-year-old Valiancy that broke the maiden last Sunday, I think, or Saturday. What do you got here?
That's good. She's going to be a two-turn. Obviously, she broke her maiden going a mile the other day, the first time out. She ran a very, very good race to be second that day. And we knew coming out of that race that Philly looks like she's going to have a very good future. I would be shocked if she's not obviously a stakes winner, hopefully a graded stakes winner down the road. Big, pretty mare, Philly, I should say, with a very beautiful stride to her. And I think, the future's out in front of her. She certainly looks like she's got a promising future.
Well, and the Bioma team, Mrs. Chu, and what's interesting about them is this is one of those horses of that's kind of typical when it comes to their history. I mean, they've paid money, nice money for some more obscure pedigrees, and have done well. And the Valiant Minister. Frankly, some of their purchases, and I'm not sure if I don't remember if this was a horse that Donato Lanny bought for them, or one of those types. But Valiant Minister had that good 2-year-old sale season last year, and this was one of them.
Yeah, and she, as I said, she's got a very good future in front of her. And Charlie and Susan too, they have been fortunate, and. Who signed the ticket on this filly? I couldn't tell you, Steve, but, they've done very well, picking horses out between them and Bob and Donato and so forth, and the team that does that. And it's fun to train from there. They really love their horses. They come to the barn when they're out here on the West Coast and really enjoy it. And Susan is, she really appreciates the animals that she has for sure.
How about the Watson Pegram Whiteman Tapizar colt?
Yeah.
The first out winner, Recall and Reload.
Yeah, he was impressive, wasn't he? It's great to see those guys do well. They've been with Bob for so long, as you well know. I mean, Mike and Bob started off in the thoroughbred business together, so to have the success that we had in a short period of time for those guys has been really, really satisfying. Recall Reload, again, another horse that who knows where he's going to go this summer. He's a horse that hopefully will have a successful Del Mar, and he's a beautiful-looking bay colt, and been training well up to that maiden win, and came out of it in great shape. So, again, another horse. We'll see what the future entails, but hopefully he'll also be a stakes competitor.
Well, and one with Flavian Pratt, when one of the occasions the Flavian with this transition that he's making to the East Coast, pretty much just wins wherever. Let's also talk about the couple of these stake wins. Private Mission, going back to Saturday, and Hopper last week, winning the Affirmed.
Hopper had been doing really well, and he obviously ran a super race that day. We were very excited to get to win the Affirmed. And then, as you said, in the Santa Maria with Private Mission, Barta ran a gallant third in that race herself. Private Mission was very impressive. I was really happy to see the way she left the gate. She left the gate perfectly that day, and Juan was able to put her in good position. And I think you might have seen her. We were talking about a horse that are talking about possibly running in her in New York earlier in the month, and we bypassed that for this for the Santa Maria, and obviously we're glad we did, and it paid off well for her to get that Grade Two victory and get her momentum back rolling again, her form back in good form for this coming summer at Del Mar.
Well, actually ran 1-2 right in that race.
First and third. Barta was third.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I'm just thumbing through here, going back to the Gold Cup. Stars, who Barta and Hopper and High. It was Hopper and High Connection that ran 1-2 in the Affirm.
That's right. Yes.
And how about Under the Stars last weekend too? The Pioneer of the Nile for Coolmore.
She won the Summer Oaks, and again, you know, broke well that day, and had been training super going into that race, and we fortunate enough to win that. So yeah, it's been a productive month.
what can we look forward to the first week and a half of Los Al?
That'll be pretty quiet. We'll probably nominate to the Great Lady M a couple of fillies, but we're still talking about that. But I don't think you'll see much action over there with those horses. I think pretty much we're going to get ready for Del Mar when Bob gets back, and that's what you'll see. And you might see a maiden or two run over at Los Alamitos. I'm not sure, but we don't have anything really yet in the condition book right now.
Very good. Well, Sean, for you then, I mean, when things kind of come back to normal and when these horses are back to the Baffert Barn, do you think that there's some client potential and getting a chance to get showcased like this?
It would certainly be great if that happened, Steve, but I've been around long enough to not anticipate that to happen. I will just kick on like we've been going and be proud of what we did and were able to do and move on. I don't know if I'll get anything from it, honestly. Going into it, the goal was just to get everything going well and keep it well until Bob gets back, and looks like that's what we did. And so I'll have a good summer. My horses that I have regularly we've had a good meet here at San Diego with my own horses. So that's been satisfying for sure. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, you've won. You know, you've never necessarily been somebody that wanted to have 120 horses to look after. I mean, but you whatever head you've had, right?
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, I did. When I was young, I thought I would love to have that many. But now that I'm older, I'm glad I don't. You know, so it's it all comes down to the quality of stock you have. And if that's 10 horses and they're 10 good horses, you're obviously going to do very well. I usually keep somewhere between 12 to 15, 16 head right there. And that's a good number. You know, I'd love to have 20, 25 would be ideal. Running in those top level races is why we're all doing this, why we all want to be in it. And, you know, with the numbers I have, I don't get that opportunity to do that on a regular basis, but you sure would love to. But again, I don't expect to really get anything out of this situation. We'll just kick on. I've got great clients of my own, and hopefully we'll have a good summer.
Well, you've won for years and years, and think about some of the big Majestic Harbor. I think of certainly, but. You know, there's no there's no doubting your ability to train a good racehorse. And so this has been one of those examples, really, of showing that if horsemen are given the opportunity with good stock, with quality horses, they can win. And that's one of the things. That's one of the messages I thought was really worth getting out there. That's really been the important lesson out of this.
You're right, Steve, and I appreciate that comment. And that goes for a lot of guys in my position, right? So it's good to see the smaller guy, have success. They don't have it like they used to with these big barns that they have. You're seeing five or six outfits across the country winning all these stakes, and it sure makes it a lot more interesting and more fun when more people get involved, more trainers get involved, other guys, and get that opportunity. And I've been lucky here. A few of the top trainers around here have came up to me and said the same thing you just said. It's good to see you doing what you're doing. And Richard Mandela was one of them, and Vladimir Serin was one of them, and basically said the same thing you're saying. So, yeah, back when I was younger, a lot of guys would at least have one good horse, and now they don't. Now it's four or five outfits, as I said, that have got everything, the majority, and sometimes that just gets a little, I don't have a correct term for it, but hopefully guys down the road, we'll be able to get a good horse someday, or a good few horses. The problem you have too with younger, with smaller outfits, Steve, is that if you do get a young 2-year-old or a good horse that jumps up, he's going to probably get bought up pretty quick by a big outfit, and then
exactly.
You can't turn the money down, right? So financially, sometimes that's what happens. So it's good when it doesn't, and the guys maybe buy a horse and maybe stay with the guy. That'd be great too. I mean, there's a lot of good trainers out there, and if they've gotten the opportunity, they would be very successful. Anyway, we'll see how things go.
Well, congratulations on the success, particularly this nice run of stake winners the last 2-3 weeks. Sean McCarthy, I appreciate this. It was great to talk.
Right, thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Sean McCarthy, everybody. And really, he and Tim Yakteen have had this this demanding and unusual responsibility. But at the same time, just as we're kind of laying out, it's also a big opportunity to showcase. And Sean McCarthy, 100 starters or so a year, and has won consistently, and it's an example of showing that you get somebody a good a good horse, they can win. Like we said the other day, I'm going to forget who it was in the conversation last week that the same topic came up, which is that it's not a knock. Nobody's trying to take away from the big barns that have achieved what they've achieved, but there's countless horsemen out there that if you give them a chance with a good horse, they can train. They'll capitalize. I mean, one of the real difficulties, Johnny's with us now, Johnny D joining us, and Johnny can attest to this. One of the challenges is that if you are a small barn and you do get your hands on a nice horse, you also are on pins and needles too when you get your chance with some good horses, and are you overly cautious about training them, and do you under train because you don't want to get one hurt because you think it's the big opportunity? So it's very tough. It's one of the real challenges that is facing the game, and a lot of this goes back to the to the point last week after Belmont, and so much consternation over the field size, and part of that discussion is concentration of talent. So that was part of the motivation. Johnny, good morning.
Stevie, how are you today?
I'm good.
I thought your Twitter note was very nice yesterday, following up on the passing of your father and the arrival of Father's Day so quickly, and I know that must have been an important day for you. But I think your sentiments were well directed at everyone else to enjoy Dad while he's here.
Well, and that and today isn't frankly no easier. Today would be my father's 93rd birthday, and yesterday I really hesitated, and even on Friday, I kind of ran out of time, but on Friday I did not want to launch into a Happy Father's Day and be maudlin. And even yesterday, it was fairly late in the afternoon that I said, I really want to say something and wish everybody. I mean, Father's Day happens to be a linchpin for a lot of participants in the game. I don't want to limit it to sons and fathers or sons and grandfathers or, sons and uncles. It's anybody. Anybody who's been brought to the racetrack, by and I called it a parental presence, a paternal presence. And, the tie of participants in the game, whether horse players or, people that train and people that go into bloodstock or, any area of the game, was introduced invariably and probably the vast majority by their father, their grandfather, their paternal presence. So I had to say something and having Father's Day and his birthday in such proximity to his passing, it weighs on you, not in a bad way either. It just kind of permeates your thoughts.
Yeah, those are days that we remember them, and that will always be the case. But yes, so your point about relatives or neighbors or whoever it might be bringing you to the racetrack when you're young is a really good point. And, when I was a tot, I think you had to be 21 to get into the racetrack in, Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And I don't know when that changed. I guess we could look it up. You can look anything up, right? But I believe when I was of impressionable age, you had to be, I think it was 21. Anyway, so I can remember my first exposure to horse racing, and I guess I remember this from a very, very young age because it's hazy, but the memory is there, of going to Brandywine Racetrack, which is in Delaware, at night for the trotters, and having that is imprinted in my mind. Now, whether that was part of the attraction that led me to want to be involved in thoroughbred racing and in horse racing for my career, I have to think so. I mean, I can remember my father, and I think my mother. I probably was 5, 6, something around there. But then, not being able to go to racetrack to the flats in the Philadelphia area when I was young, I think we lost a bit of a generation there. Not having kids being able to be exposed to racing. So while I understand why the law was there, because of the gambling and whatnot. We were very much more puritanical in those in that 60s decade. But, you know, I think it really deprived us of a generation attending the races at a young age.
It's, you know, it's funny because a lot of people, because I talk about and over the, you know, over these 15, 17 years, have talked a lot about the family, but my family, but it was really my grandfather who was the only real connection and the only person who really had a interest and active participation as a horse player. I mean, he just loved going to Belmont and Aqueduct, and not just there either. In fact, I was with my brother yesterday. My brother, who we affectionately call, you know, my brother, the press agent. My brother, you know, who works on Broadway, has a regional show in Pittsfield, and so we went to the Bennington Theater Company yesterday in Pittsfield to see Ain't Misbehavin'. It was really actually ended up being a very special evening and afternoon, because my father had taken us to see Ain't Misbehavin' when it was on Broadway in 1978, and so Jamie's, you know, he's the handling all the press. And so he said, you know, there's going to be a performance on Father's Day. Do you want to meet us? So Tina and I went, met him and Diego, and afterward we had dinner. My brother and I were laughing about my grandfather showing up at our house in Connecticut when we were kids. I come home from school one afternoon, and his car is in the driveway. He had driven up from Great Neck and basically ran away from home, ran away from my grandmother for a week. And he wanted to go to Rockingham or even to Rhode Island. I think Narragansett was still open. And he wanted to go to Narragansett because he had never been. And that was... that was a very vivid childhood memory. Was him running away, and he took my father, and I must have been, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 years old, and I think he took my father and Len Cedar, our next door neighbor, and I think they went to Narragansett. It's pretty funny.
Nothing like a day at the track for the boys.
Too funny. Well. It's an important day for fans of the game and horse players, no doubt about it. Father's Day, so that's our Father's Day treatise.
And I think some fathers, Father's Day in a lot of places, fathers get to pick what the family does. One of the few times, I'm sure, that fathers get to pick what the family does. Excuse me, and. I think in a lot of cases, fathers pick the racetrack. And so I think probably yesterday across the country, there were quite a few fathers and families there, more than normal. There's a three-par golf course that I go hit balls at on the weekend sometimes. And I noticed that Father's Day, I pulled in at, you know, like 7:15 in the morning, and the parking lot was packed because all the fathers were out there with, and you could see that some of the daughters, maybe teenage daughters, they didn't want to be there at 7:15 in the morning playing par three golf with their fathers and their grandfathers. You could kind of see it on some of the young kids' faces. They didn't really want to be there, but okay, it's Father's Day. We got to do what Dad wants, you know. So you could see the groupings of the families as they started out on the par three course. And I imagine it looked similar at the racetrack.
We went by a few. It's funny. We went by a few. We were all over the place over the weekend. We were in Bennington as well, and my friend Leslie Knopf alerted me. I think I said Bennington, but Barrington Stage Company. And my brother actually told that story, which was very funny. That the two founders of Barrington Stage, they originally had expected and wanted to be in Barrington. But they ended up not being able to find a space, so they had already named it the Barrington Stage, and they were in another town the first season, and they couldn't get a place in Great Barrington, so they ended up in Pittsfield. So it's kind of funny because people when they hear Barrington Stage, they assume Great Barrington, but it's in Pittsfield. I love that area too. For those that have, for those of you that are coming to Saratoga, here's another. I think we gave a little spiel on this a couple of weeks ago. There is so much for you to do on off days, or if you're coming for any period of time. Fold in a Western Mass, from Barrington to Pittsfield is unbelievable. I mean, you've got Tanglewood right there. You've got Williamstown, the Williamstown Theater Festival. There's so much. Between that corridor and then across, across to, to Saratoga and the Capital District, and even if you want to go further north, we should actually, we'll do, when I get back from vacation, we'll do a special travelogue kind of a thing for people to help plan their trips to Saratoga. And you can do the Del Mar one, Johnny.
In the last 20 years, I've probably been to Saratoga more than Del Mar.
Lately, that's true. That's true.
Del Mar has actually changed quite a bit. Last time I was there for the Breeders' Cup. Excuse me. Had a great time, and that area has changed so much. I mean, talk about drastic changes. That when you look out from the grandstand across the street on the hills, are just covered with condominiums, and then of course you have the fish market, and you have like Red Tractons is there right across the street, and you can
right.
see all this stuff from the grandstand of the racetrack, and there's the Winner's Circle, I believe is there, and there's a lot of condos on the hill. The hills are covered with condos. Well, when I first started Del Mar, those hills were barren. I mean, they were dirt. They were just hills. And there was a drive-in movie theater on the corner there, like where the fish market is and Red Tractons. That was a drive-in movie theater. And I look at those hills, and I was laughing because I was around some horsemen. I said, was I... Excuse me. Was I an idiot? I said, I look at those hills now. Why didn't I buy one of those condos when they first built them? What an idiot. Why didn't I see the future? You know, how beautiful this place was. We all knew. I remember now. I remember why I didn't buy anything. I didn't have any money. Because when those condos were for sale, they were probably $200,000. And $200,000 to me, it might as well have been a million. Yeah, you know, I didn't have that kind of money. I was a young whippersnapper making my way. But some of the older horsemen, I can't remember exactly who, but they said, "Yeah, well, you've got an excuse. You didn't have any. You were young and stupid and didn't have any money." We were old. We could see what was coming, and we didn't do anything.
That's it's funny you say that, because I can remember when I realized in the 90s once I moved to Montreal and was coming to Saratoga. My buddy Phil and I were coming, at least three weekends of meet, and then virtually every every weekend of the meet. And then when I moved here, obviously, in 99, then I was here almost every day. But in the 90s, at some point, I absolutely got the sense that what was happening in Saratoga, and there probably was a moment or two where I could have, you know, kind of picked up something on the cheap, even if it was something to renovate on a, you know, there were sections of Saratoga, there still are, the sections now, even if you wanted to make an investment, the pricing is out of control. I mean, I moved here in 99, and it's a Greenwich. I bought this house for $106,000, the 14-room house, for $106,000. The same, I had to put some work into it. Over, it took about 3 years to renovate.
Yeah, plus it was haunted, though.
Plus, well, that was fine. They helped, actually. The same house that also would have required renovation in Saratoga then was easily $250,000 to $300,000. So I said to myself, I mean, if you buy something like that at Saratoga, then you know you're sort of out of cash immediately. I mean, it's like, you know, where do you go from here? But what I did here, I wouldn't call this an investment property. It was a place to live, in the area. And yeah, I mean, it's appreciated, but it's not like what's happened in Saratoga, which is the exponential, the prices, I mean, have tripled, quadrupled and then some. And then there's the McMansion phenomena where people are buying, you know, buying one or two properties, knocking them down and building, you know, gigantic, mini mansions.
You know, the opportunity was knocking at my door, and I looked out the window and said, "Hey, get away from my door. What are you doing here?" and that was it. He never came back. Yeah. You know, I don't know this weekend. I mean, obviously we're watching racing and stuff, but the U.S. Open, certainly a Father's Day tradition, was on television this week, and it was interesting because they were at the Country Club in Brookline, Mass. And I don't know, you've spent some time around that area, I guess. Maybe you are familiar with it, but It was so interesting to hear the history of the course. It shared the course was shared the property with a racetrack, and this entire property was polo fields and equestrian centers, and you know, and they put a golf course there, and actually they did a little piece on the broadcast. Well, I knew this before, but then we did a little piece on the telecast early on Saturday, I saw it, and we may have done it some other days too. Maybe it was early Sunday. Two of the golf course holes were inside the racetrack. In other words, and they had on the local rules where if you landed on the racetrack, you know, you got to drop. Or the racetrack was considered a hazard because you had to play over the racetrack to get to the holes. I mean, it's a very interesting, there's a lot of stuff on the, obviously, you can Google it and check it all out. But we're talking 1893, roughly, when the golf course was laid out. I mean, it's just amazing how, you know, racing was such an integral part of life in America. Something obviously we brought from Britain, and yet we didn't bring as much fanfare over as we see at Ascot every year. But you know, the people who came here were familiar with horse racing, and they wanted to see it here. And I notice that as we get further and further away from being involved with the horse on a daily basis, which for a city kid like me, when I was a kid, the only time I saw a horse, there was a cop sitting on top of it. That's the only horse I ever saw. Or I did see horse-drawn carriages. Guys would come up the street, and they would be selling stuff, either vegetables. The vegetable man would come, or a guy, a knife sharpener. He had a,
sure.
he had a horse.
A tinker.
He'd come up the street. Yeah, and a guy selling Javella water. Now, I don't know if it's bleach, but you used it for your laundry. Somebody will text you and tell you what Javella water is. But he would come up the street with his horse. My point is, the further we're getting away from horses, excuse me, the less people know about horses, the less we're familiar with.
Right.
How taking care of them and what's all involved. And I'm certainly not a person who grew up with horses, as I just explained. But I spent a lot of time around the stable area and the barn area. And so, you know, and I've heard a lot of reasons for horses to scratch. You know, and I know all the things that can happen between entry time and race day. But our country, we used to be relying on the horse. I mean, the horse was everything. And it's just interesting when something pops up like this, to hear about a racetrack, a good-sized racetrack. It was, you know, this golf course is now one of the most, you know, well-known golf courses in our country, or revered golf courses. It's called the Country Club. That history is just—it's so interesting to me, especially with the racing tie-in. And my wife has to walk into the room. My wife has to walk into the room as they were showing this piece, and she said, "Look at that! Your two passions tied together." She said, "You would have never left that place."
Well, It's funny you bring that up. I mean, the wagon drawn. We've talked about this topic. The proximity to the horse. In fact, this came up just recently. Actually, we had this conversation, and I forget who brought it up. But those are such, you know, those are such old fashioned and. You know, days gone by. Although there's still, what's the name that they call the produce wagon guy? Starts with an A. Wow. Well, for goodness sakes. But anyway, those. We used to have, you still have on the racetrack, you've got a guy that comes around with the pickup truck, though, now. It's not a, that sells produce and fruit, you know, fruit and vegetables on the backstretch.
And the tinker,
you know, there's even a tinker, there's a tinker in the Capital District, actually, that comes like maybe twice a year to... You know, knock dents out of pots and pans. I don't know if they even do that anymore, knocking dents out of pots and pans, but sharpen knives, basically. The tinker.
Amazing stuff. And I never knew what this Javella water was. I never asked anybody, but it's a bleaching agent that I guess it was before. Clorox? I don't know.
Well, Javel means Javel. There's a brand now, right? Isn't there a big brand from South America and Central America, Javel, that I think Procter owns? you know, we're forgetting, Johnny, you're going to make me do this, and people are going to be really sorry that I'm, because you're going to make me tell a joke.
Okay.
Well, the great story about the ice wagon. Did I ever tell you this? There's the Iceman, the Iceman, going down the street, and he's got the horse-drawn wagon with, you know, he's selling ice. Years ago, this is how they did it. They'd have he'd go to the ice house and had blocks of ice, and then he'd cut off. People would buy ice. That was how you did it. And like when we have Blue on, and he talks about the Frigidaire. That's what he's talking about. The ice box.
That's what my grandfather did. He worked for an ice delivery. You know, yeah, he carried the ice upstairs. Yeah.
Well, that's it. And so, you know, here's the little guy on the wagon, and he's going down the street, ice for sale, and the horses, you know, dragging the wagon. And, you know, winter, summer, you know, doesn't matter. And there's a woman up in the third floor of a walk-up, and she screams, I'll have ice, I want some ice. So he climbs off the wagon. He gets his chunk of ice with that device, you know, those pinchers, puts the ice up on the shoulder, and up he goes. And, you know, he parks the horse in the wagon up against the sidewalk, and, you know, he's gone for a few minutes, and somebody's walking past the wagon, and as they walk past, the horse goes, "What a life." And the guy stops. Guy stops. He says, did you say something? And the horse says, yeah, I said, what a life. Guy says to the horse, he said, what do you mean? What's wrong? What's wrong with your life? He said, what's wrong with my life? 6 days a week, I'm dragging this wagon around with the little guy selling ice. It doesn't matter. It could be 100 degrees. It could be pouring down rain. 6 days a week, it's ice, you know, dragging this wagon. And then on Sundays, as if that's not enough, he takes me to the park, and he leads me around for kiddie rides all day long. 7 days a week I'm working. He says, that's why I say, what a life. Guy says, does he know you can talk? The horse says, does he know I can talk? No, and don't tell him, he'll make me yell ice for sale. I'll be here all week.
I enjoy it. I don't know how many people, you know, switched over to 70s on 7 while this is going on.
That's wonderful. And I've told that story a lot. And you know where that comes from? That's a Flip Wilson joke.
Oh, okay.
That's a Flip Wilson joke from the album from The Devil Made Me Buy This Dress. That's on the. It's when we used to buy comedy albums, when we were kids, you'd buy a comedy album. That was YouTube for us.
Yeah, YouTube. Speaking of talking, and you know, I have to give a shout out to you. You had him on this morning, and if there's a better racing broadcaster than Nick Luck, I don't know who he is. He's so good, and he's such a pleasure to listen to. Now he's got the advantage of that accent and everything, and it, you know, everything he says sounds better than it really is. You know, it sounds more official than it really is. But he and Scott Hazelton, I thought, did a really good job this past week. I didn't get to see everything. I didn't see every minute. But the parts that I saw, I thought they got along really well, and they did a very good job of explaining things to the fans, particularly Nick's explanation of the rules difference between the U.S. You know, they both bandied back and forth about it, and the rules in Britain, where, you know, it was clear that a foul had occurred, and it was also clear that had that same foul occurred in the United States, that horse is probably not only coming down, but probably being placed maybe fourth, you know, behind the horse he originally fouled. And here in Britain, the horse not only stays up, the jockey then gets, I believe, a 10-day suspension. And Nick was adept enough to go step by step and explain the levels of disqualification, the reasons for disqualification, the levels of jockey bans, the length, and why, and why it's different than the U.S.
Yeah,
a very a wonderful explanation. And Scott was along for the ride, but Scott plays off. They play off each other so well. It's great to see that teamwork, and I enjoyed watching it.
Well, and I had brought up with Nick, in fact, during the preview that he was going to get to work with Scott, because they had been on that terrific international team that Zoe Cadman was involved in for many years. I mean, going back to Nat Al Sheba in Dubai. I mean, even before Maidan, they were on that. Scott's been doing the international early on in his career, and of course you worked with him at HR, and of course with Zoe as well. But you know, there's a standard of excellence with him. I'll never forget the first time I had him on our first correspondent for the international stuff was Kate Miller, Racing Kate from William Hill. And the first two Breeders' Cups that we covered with Kate, and she was terrific. And, of course, she famous for the first use of Argy Bargy on the show, which yeah. is one of the great moments in the show's history. But then when she left William Hill, that got me to Nick, and I just remember the first Santa Anita broadcast with Nick Gluck, and me asking different races and different horses, and he didn't have a list of starters, he didn't have PPs, he didn't have anything. And there's certain things that I remember, Johnny, but I've never seen or heard anything like what he. The dissertations that he could deliver, and just had an instantaneous recall, total recall of every starter that I would bring up of these international runners, and he would say, well, you know, when he burst to the lead in the Moyglare, and when he did, you know, when he did this at St. Cloud, and I've never seen anything like it. It amazes me. It still does. He's won like 11 presenters of the year. I mean, he's an all-time great.
When he does that, when he, you know, he's on the show and he bursts into, you know, without notes, and he just talks about each horse and tells you about Moyglare and that, well, this, and that, you know, we wouldn't know if he was lying anyway. We have no idea. Because he knows his audience.
That's a fair point.
No, so he just lets us watch. You know? But he does it with such conviction. He does it with such conviction that you think, man, this guy really knows what he's talking about. when you see someone do something, This is for me. I'm always incredibly impressed. I'm especially impressed when I see someone do something and I say to myself, I wish I could do that. That's when I'm really impressed. And that's the case with him. When he's on the air and he's just, you know, just delivering all the information, and he's by the way, Scott Hazelton, and you say you correctly said I worked with Scott a long time ago when Scott first started. He has improved immensely, and he has really worked at it, and he's does a great job now. He's great to listen to. And he's got a very friendly demeanor. So he doesn't talk down to people. You know, if he doesn't know something, which I think is a strength for Scott, if he's not sure about something, he knows a lot about racing, but if he's not sure about something, he'll say, I'm not really sure about this. And I appreciate that when broadcasters do that. I don't like to be talked down to. And Scott is just so, and I think that's why the chemistry between him and Nick is so great, because they're both, it's like they're just sitting at the races talking, and that's really what I want
ideal.
As a viewer. Yeah, that's what I want as a viewer.
Yeah.
I always enjoy watching Ascot. I tried to keep up with both. PVG had it, and Peacock also had it, and I tried to keep up with both, and I had to make sure that I was keeping track of the carriage roster each day so I could let my wife know if anyone interesting showed up. And, of course, Kate, the Duchess of Windsor, is that the right name? Yeah, I think it is, better known as Kate. Showed up one day, and of course I had to let my wife know. Kate's going to be in the carriage today so that my wife could come and see what she was wearing and how beautiful she is. And, you know, that whole, I wondered to myself, I said, well, the Queen didn't make it this year in the carriage. She may not ever again. It's a good possibility. She's only 90-something. Will it be as special? You know, because the other people, I think, obviously, to the British people, the other people are interesting as well. But for the American audience, the Queen was always, here comes the Queen in the carriage. That was the highlight of everything. The other people, we don't really, at least I don't know what they do, all these dukes and the archduke and the semi-duke and the half-duke and the quarter-duke. I don't know what they all do, but I know the Queen, when Gail and I, my wife, were able to, when we went to Ascot, Harry was there that day, and she hadn't seen Harry, So I thought to myself, but when the Queen goes, is it really going to, and yes, you know what happens in life? It starts over again. And there's a new, and Kate is as popular and as fantastic. You know, she's not the Queen. No, she's half the Queen, more than half the Queen's age, less than half the Queen's age. But someday, she'll be the Queen, and not the Queen, but wait a minute. Can she be the Queen? No, she'll be the Queen, but not the Queen. No, she can't be the Queen. No, she can't be the Queen, right?
Well, she just won't be the reigning monarch.
Yeah, she won't be the monarch. She'll be the Queen, but she won't be the monarch. Okay, that's it. But anyway, it'll still be, when Kate, I'm leaping forward. When Kate is 65 or when Kate is 82, people are going to run and want to see Kate because, look how good she looks for her age.
That was some payoff, which is unbelievable. Johnny, this was a classic. This was a meanderer, replete with the ice wagon joke. I got to get Mig in here. You're going off to play golf, right? Oh, yeah, you're going to go off and.
Monday's usually outing day somewhere. Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well. So it's not like you're playing in the 18-hole U.S. Open playoff.
No, I didn't make the cut this year. Although, still amateur.
Johnny. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it was. I got a little caught up on it this morning. I was yesterday afternoon. I got involved with the show that we did, but it's always great. It's always this same weekend. It's always this Father's Day weekend, and
that's
one of one of those special weekends. Johnny, we are off, of course, the next 2 weeks, and 10 days. So we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Be ready for Saratoga.
I'm ready.
You're ready?
You'll be ready.
All right.
For Saratoga. Yeah.
I'll be ready. After vacation, I'll be ready.
All right. We'll see you up there.
We'll talk to you plenty before. Johnny D, XB Johnny D, everybody. Let's take a break. Last of the morning, we got an hour, a little less. And Rich Migliori and Andrew Offerman to follow. Todd Pletcher tomorrow. Todd getting caught up himself after being gone most of last week. So he begged off for a Tuesday appearance, all right? So tomorrow, Andy Serling, Todd Pletcher, Brad Cox, and more. All right, back after this, Rich Migliori joins us.
For details. The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands
on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college.